This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. On the program today, a couple of our favorite gardeners are here, Diane Nolan and Chuck Voigt. They are here to answer your questions about plants in the home landscape, herbs, vegetables, flowering plants, shrubs, trees. We look forward to your phone calls this afternoon. You can join us with a telephone call. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Diane teaches in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois. She's the author with Kristen Bolin of Perennials for the Landscape. She's also the author of the textbook Floral Design and Interior Landscape Management. And she's the host of Illinois Gardener on our companion station, WILL-TV. Yes. The show airs live on Thursday evening at 7 and is repeated Saturday morning at 11. Chuck is State Vegetable and Herb Extension Specialist in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. He is the co-author with J.S. Vandermark of Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest. And both of them are fairly regular guests here on the program. Good to see you.
Because we have so much fun.
You do.
With you, Celeste. That's
fun. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to have you here. So, before we went on the air, Diane was telling Chuck and me about this project that she's growing your own chili.
I am going to grow every part of it that I can do. So the tomatoes, of course, are coming out of my ears. Well, they're growing well. The onions, the garlic, and I have four kinds of dried beans, and they're coming along beautifully. I've started to harvest two of them because they're earlier varieties.
What Jacob's, kind of beans?
Jacob's Cattle, which is kind of a burgundy with white spots. And then a Coco Rubico, which is a kind of a pinkish one with burgundy spots. And I learned about those because I went to Organic Gardening Day last fall. And they had the folks there from, what was the company?
The Seed Savers.
Seed Savers. And so I got great ideas. I'm also growing the white, Great White Northern, and the red. That's not very fancy.
Red kidney bean?
Yeah, red. I don't remember what type, actually. Yeah. I'm growing four kinds.
You know, I feel a segue coming on here. Do you?
I do feel a segue.
Organic Gardening Day?
Yes, that's coming up November 10th, right here in Urbana. I'm really excited. Elliot Coleman, who's a famous organic farmer from Maine, who lectures and writes great books about that, and is kind of a character. I've successfully booked him to come in and do that. So I'm excited that that's going to happen.
And, you know, it's not easy to garden in Maine. They have such a short season. So this should be very good.
Yeah, he uses greenhouses and probably some high tunnel kind of greenhouses that are unheated to extend the season. And I'm excited to hear.
But we can use that here to extend our longer season.
You know, unless you're at the equator, any season probably can be extended.
Yeah. Now, an event like this is really popular, Organic Gardening Day, also Herb Day, that kind of thing.
Right.
So is it too soon for people to start marking their calendar and getting the registration in?
I would say go ahead. Shall I give a phone number?
Sure.
217-333. Mm-hmm. 7738.
Okay.
That's my secretary, and she'd be happy to put you on the mailing list, and we'll get the information out as soon as it's complete, but we're just about there. We usually try to get it out 2 months in advance, and doggone it, it's going to be 2 months before November 10th before we know it.
And something about November is so good because you have just gone through your gardening season. You can reevaluate, get ideas. And I had my garden planned by January because I had gone to this, I'd made notes, and then you get it planned and then you don't waste time. Where is it going? You just put it in once you can start in April or May.
When those first catalogs start to pile up in December, you're ready. You've got a plan in your head.
Yeah. Well, what should we be doing at this point in the garden?
Well, I'll say a few things and then you go for it. But I've been taking out second or third plantings of lettuce. And if I don't have something to go right in, but you can plant your fall spinaches. And it's probably okay for turnips still, lettuce again. But I've been putting some compost in. And if I'm not ready to plant right away, I put compost in. And And then when I do plant, I water it the day before and let it soak down in. Although we got a rain. Hopefully everyone
nice?
Who hears my voice got a little bit of rain. So I've been doing some cleanup like that and starting for this. This is really about the window of planting the fall, except for lettuce and spinach can go a little farther and radishes.
Yeah, because right now it's hot.
Yeah, and that's why I haven't been doing too much. But I've been running out harvesting and running back in to can or freeze or something. Chuck, you're next.
And yet you look remarkably fresh.
Well, it was beautiful today, and it's cool in here.
Yeah, it's nice. It's only 80 at the moment, but we're heading up into the 90s again soon.
Right. Yeah, well, I think the fall garden, I'm still hoping to get in some carrots and beets and things that get up to a nice baby size.
Peas. If you had some short season.
Yeah, or the Wando that's heat resistant, but the season's really backwards for them.
It is.
If you could find plants of something like the cabbage family, those would be good to put out still yet, I think, especially cabbages. Some of the, like Brussels sprouts and things, are probably getting a little past the window when they would work. And it's probably a little late to direct seed. Maybe if you had a really early cabbage, you could still get by with it.
Yeah. We're still doing basil. We've got a big pot.
Gorgeous.
And then we just snip little delicate, they get up to about maybe 6 inches. We don't let them get real long. We go to the farmer's market and get the bundle, but then for just little, little snip here and there. And
it has been the best basil season because of the heat.
Tomatoes, little tomato and mozzarella.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Did you bring some?
No, I didn't. And we've been doing pizza on the grill.
Oh, fun.
Which with mozzarella. Mozzarella. And fresh basil out of the garden and tomatoes. And boy, that's pretty darn good.
I've been doing the cucumber and onion layered with the vinaigrette. That's really good.
Well, speaking of things that are now coming into the house and we're doing all this work, or at least you are. I don't do that kind of work.
But it sounds like you do some.
What can we do to preserve the bounty that we've got right now?
Well, people have their favorites. Some like the freezing and some like the canning. So, and there's drying for herbs. You can dry, but I've been doing some of each, but I don't like to do it boringly. It was a great green bean year, and I grew 4 different kinds of green beans, and I have yard-long ones coming on. But I guess they're better when they're shorter. It's the Chinese type.
Uh-huh.
It's a little firmer. But I had a really good crop of the Italian green beans, which are thicker and flatter, and several other kinds. And so I did freeze with onion and bacon some of those, and then I canned others and had the green beans with the onions, and some of them I layered green beans, onions, and tomatoes, and that's going right into a stew. So you can do either of those, really. It depends on what you have the space for or the jars, if you have enough freezer space.
Yeah, and something that I just figured out today, I saw it online, a tip for preserving herbs was to layer them in salt, and so you have a flavored salt, because I've done it with sugar.
Tell the types of things you've done with sugar, because that's
lemon balm and lemon verbena. I should really get into it a little bit more.
A lemon specialist.
Yes.
Oh, but that's lemon. Lemon verbena is just so wonderful.
Yeah.
And balm is a little more subtle. It's really good.
So what would you put in salt? I'm thinking tarragon?
I would put thyme.
Thyme.
Probably layer rosemary. Wouldn't that be a very pungent? Mm. It'd be good for steaks
potatoes.
Oregano.
Mm-hmm. Marjoram, whichever one. They have kind of a similar.
Mm-hmm. You could do kind of an Herbe de Provence salt.
Oh, that'd be trendy happening.
You could do that, or you could do like an Italian herb, a blend with basil and oregano and some of those other things.
Yum.
And put it in something so you can see the layers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then really when it's completely desiccated, I guess, would you pull that out or would you just leave it in there?
I would leave it, but I'm sure the purists would say take it out and just have the salt. But I think I would leave it. But depends on how well it holds up. Thyme would hold up beautifully.
And rosemary, too, I guess. Some of the...
Mm-hmm, they would dry. But it depends on it. Do they change colors? They would darken?
I would think they would darken.
If they darkened, you may want to
remove it. With the salt desiccating it quickly, it might hold color better than it would somewhere else.
And another preservation method is vinegars. And then I use those in my vinaigrettes. I've done rosemary vinegars, and I used to have a lot of salad burnet, which is a cucumber flavor, and that's so good. But basil vinegar, and if you can get the purple leaf, dark mm-hmm. opal or purple ruffles, it makes this beautiful vinegar, kind of like a balsamic vinegar color. It's burgundy. It's really pretty, pinkish.
Pinkish, yeah.
And that just makes coleslaw and vinaigrettes taste so good. It adds the herb right in it.
How about an herbal jelly?
Mm-hmm. I have lemon thyme jelly in my cabinet right now. I didn't make it, but I use it when I bake chicken. I put it over the top of the chicken.
Yeah, because I like hot pepper jelly, so why couldn't you do basil jelly?
You could.
Not a problem. Hmm.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon, Diane Noland and Chuck Voigt. If you've got a question or a comment, join us this afternoon with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. We had a question from a staff member about pruning. When to prune? How to prune?
Why to prune?
Why to prune?
I want to do the why first, because some people just prune for, you know, to prune. But usually it's to control the size, or if it's moving across an area that you're walking, or rubbing the house or roof. Sometimes you can do a little bit of pruning. If it's going to be major pruning, you probably should have put a shrub that's a different size. But if you want to control it a little bit, and the number two reason is to rejuvenate it, to make it really a newer shrub, give it a new lease on life. So for the rejuvenating, and I always think of lilacs because they get big and old and have those woody stems, you want to take out the 1/3 of the largest branches. You don't want to take 1/3 of the branches, I should say, 1/3 of the canopy. So one branch could be 1/3 of the canopy. You know, you cut the oldest, biggest one out, usually after flowering. But you could still do it now. It wouldn't hurt too much.
Okay.
But normally, for just cutting back and a little bit of shaping, you would trim any plant after it flowers, trim it, prune it then. Because if you wait till now, you'll prune off flower buds. You'll prune off the wood that they're making the flower buds on. You want to throw in some other things? Some can be pruned at any time if you don't care about flowering.
Well, things that don't flower in the spring, that's not their major thing, you would mm-hmm. probably want to do those late winter, early spring while they're dormant. That's the easiest time to see what's going on. if you really want to teach yourself how to prune well, I think red twig dogwood is one of the easiest things to teach yourself that, because the one-year-old twigs are bright red. The two-year-old twigs are starting to lose some of that, and by about 3 years, they're turning kind of a brownish gray, and it kind of tells you take when it's not pretty anymore, take it out, and it actually works out that's
clean me up.
I did start with those.
Years ago. If you need a trainer plant, I think that's a good one. The other thing is don't. Unless there's some specific reason why it needs to be flat or rounded or something, don't prune just to make geometric shapes. You know, unless you're actually making a topiary or something.
Unless you want to put your purse on a shrub to open the door. I mean, there's really no reason. I'm so glad you said that, Chuck. I love the naturalistic pruning, and you just prune into the canopy back to another major branch. You cannot tell when you've pruned normally, and it's just a very pretty, usually rounded or oval, but
right.
Not really severe.
It ends up looking like it decided to grow more full and more dense rather than you whacked it back to within an inch of its life, and now it's under control.
And if you prune it to a round shape, then you really do see the new growth, and then you're compelled to take off the new growth, which is actually very good for the shrub to have new growth. So cut it down into the overall outline, and, you know, then you've got new growth. Always cut to another branch or another node that's going to have fresh growth on it. And then you won't have to prune as often.
Right. And you get a more interesting texture because you have slightly different lengths and light and dark and all those things
and
playing.
And probably a healthier shrub.
Let's take a call. A listener in Vermilion County on line 4. Hi.
Hi. I have several questions, but if you have other callers behind me, I will just...
Well, we just have one other caller behind you, so go ahead and hit us with your best shot.
Several questions. Going back to the basil and the vinaigrette, how much basil do you put into what kind of vinegar?
I will take a glass jar, and actually I use old salad dressing glass containers or whatever you have with plastic containers, so no metal. I put the fresh washed basil into the jar just till it fits.
You stuff it in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can put it in, until it fits. And it's really easy. And I do the easiest method. I use white or wine vinegar.
Wine,
that's right.
Vinegar.
Wine vinegar. So you can see it. And then it just starts to turn. Some people have a heating method. I've had great vinegars with just pouring it in. And you kind of shake the bottle to get the air bubbles out from around the leaves. And then just cap it and keep it out of sunlight. And it'll start to change colors within about 10 minutes, maybe less.
Right.
Okay, so you're talking about really packing basil in there.
Well,
no,
it doesn't
not
have
really.
To be packed. Just put in there until it's...
It's comfortable for you to get it in.
Right. Just you don't have to tamp them in so that it's a solid mass.
Okay, but you're using a lot of basil then.
Quite a bit.
Okay.
But I have taken one branch of a dark opal basil and placed it down in, and that was enough. It's a lighter pink then.
Well, you sometimes see bottles in shops that have just like a little bit in, and I didn't know if that.
And this is what they do.
Is that for decoration?
Right. They take out the original one that's a little more used up, and they'll put a new sprig back in for display, and then you can identify the vinegar, which you can do the same thing. But after a time, that herb just looks tired.
Yeah. I mean, okay.
You really need to take it out.
The essence of it has been drawn out into the vinegar. I don't think Diane mentioned kind of daily it's good to agitate it.
Shake it.
So that so that the same piece of basil isn't always sticking out of the vinegar because it could mold it above the liquid line.
Okay.
And it's very fun, very easy.
And I would recommend when you're done just strain it through two thicknesses of coffee filter or something like that so you get all the grit and anything that might have been in it and you just have this pure, clear sparkling color, whatever it is.
But anything you would season what you're making, in the oil or in the salad dressing, that can go into vinegar.
Okay. Right.
And if the color's not important, you can even use like an apple cider vinegar or something that's not
exactly.
clear.
Exactly. Because rosemary is almost better than in an apple cider vinegar because it's strong.
Yeah. It's good on its own. And then some people also say that just the plain white distilled vinegar is pretty harsh because it's
distilled.
It's kind of industrially produced. It's not as nice as a rice vinegar or white wine
vinegar
or something.
It just depends upon the price. You can always find
if you have something that's going to give you a real delicate color like chive blossoms or something, then you want something that's clear to begin with so that you get that just delicate
light,
lavender pink.
Light pink. It's very pretty. And that onion in the vinegar, just light onion, that is so good. But you can mix and match them. You don't have to have just a single one.
Right. Okay, so with basil, you take the leaves off the stem, you get a little...
I don't necessarily.
I do.
Okay.
I do it the lazy way, and he does it the harder way.
Because I tend to think the stems can have a little bit of an off flavor in them. If they're young and tender...
I just do the tips.
And you can still clip them with your fingernail, that wouldn't be a problem. But when you get those older woody stems, I would not...
Right, and they've turned brown, that wouldn't be good. I just stuff in the stems that are the tips and then, there's as many ways to do it as there are people. So
and
you
leave the flowers on that or you let them go?
You could leave the flowers on if they have any.
Ideally, it wouldn't have flowered.
Yeah, I haven't done it with flowers, but you could. Some of the Thai basils, it's still a good, and some of the lemon basils still would have a good flavor.
It would be interesting, some of those that are very floriferous, to do one of only flowers.
Yes,
because
it would be.
Because there's a floral... sweet lightness to the flowers that isn't in the leaves and some of those.
Report back to us if you do that.
Well, I just learned from you on the program that you're supposed to keep the basil short. Mine's, you know, gotten probably 18, 20, 24 inches high, so I should have kept it clipped back to 10 or 12.
Not necessarily. Is it flowering profusely?
Yes, I went away on vacation, so I cut
it all down. I cut it in half,
you know, just and I got back a week later, and it's all, everything's flowering. So
it just happens that way.
Just start harvesting again and keep it up.
And just I've been cutting off just the same height, you know, all the way back.
Well, you can do it that way, or you can do when a branch gets like 8 leaves on it, you can take 4 of those off, and then the other 4 nodes will break, and you get branches.
Okay. But ideally, I should keep it short, much shorter.
Well, just non-flowering,
yeah,
I think,
more compact.
Oh, okay.
So that the leaves have a truer flavor if they're not nourishing flowers, because the plant tends to take away the essence to the flower becomes the most important thing.
I see. Okay. Can we move on to other questions?
Well, one more, and then later in the program, maybe we can invite you to call
that's
back.
That's fine.
Okay.
I have some ferns that are on the north side of my house that are 4 or 5 feet out that are burnt because they're not really in shade. When should I move them to more shady places?
Well, when they're in stress like that, you could remove some of the leaves that are burnt, and you could move them now because they're very stressed, and they're going to perk up the minute they get into a shadier spot. But don't move all of those leaves because you're going to be disrupting the roots, so you need to remove some of the shoots. So keep the root-shoot ratio equalized, and it will actually help them to get into new shady spots.
Are you sure that too much light is the problem as opposed to just them being very dry?
I would imagine it's both. I mean, this happens each year, and they don't die, but they look like they're practically dead.
Yeah, because at the home farm, they go down about this time most years, and it's they're on the north side, and they do it clear up to the house. It's more about moisture than about light, because they'll take quite a bit of light generally if you keep them moist.
But it's been a double whammy this year with the heat
and
the
dry.
So cut straight down into them.
Well, you can if you're going to move a few of them, just cut off those really older ones that are going to make it hard to move.
Okay, thank you very much.
You are welcome.
Very welcome. Next, we talk with someone in Gilman, line 1. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yes, I'm Karen. I love your show. I have a hibiscus that I've had for 3 years now, and I transplanted it once, and it's small flower. It stays nice and beautifully green, but it won't flower.
Is it in full sun?
Pardon?
Is it in full sun?
Yes, I have it outside. I bring it in the winter.
Oh, so is it a shiny leafed one?
Yes.
Is it a tropical? I see.
Oh, it's, well, it, you know, the first 2 years it was beautiful. And then I transplanted it, and I've always brought it in the winter, and then I cut it back, real severe, and it looks beautiful, but it just won't flower.
I would have thought it would have. I mean, it's not really a juvenility.
Yeah, usually it's hard to keep them from flowering.
Right.
Are
you over fertilizing it? Because high nitrogen will keep it in beautiful leaf, but not flower.
I don't think so, unless my husband goes behind me and waters it or whatever.
Well, that's just something to think about. But high nitrogen, even if sometimes they're putting them in the soil mixes too.
Yeah.
But just
those sneaky, frustrated farmers.
Usually, yeah. It's the opposite. People don't do anything, but just don't give it too much care as far as nitrogen. That's the other thing I would think that would keep it from flowering.
Well. Okay, we just...
It doesn't sound like you're doing anything wrong if you're not over-fertilizing.
No, well, it's beautiful. That's just not doing what it did when I first got it.
I know sometimes they do like to flower when they're more stressed in the pot. Is it a really large pot?
Not real big,
Well, I say don't transplant it, and, you know, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And
Wait till next year.
When it starts to flower, just let it do its thing.
Okay.
But yeah, it might be a wait till next year. Chuck and I love to say that.
Yeah.
So I hope it does flower for you.
Kind of like the cubs. Wait till next
year.
We haven't thoroughly given up on this year.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana. Line 2, hi.
Hi, that must be me.
That is you.
I'm wondering if you know who ate my Brussels sprouts. The leaves are just the ribs. There's nothing left.
Are there little green caterpillars on them?
I can't see anything on it. I can see, well, no, I don't know if they've eaten so much. I can see little, what I think are little black poops, you know, like you'd find if a tomato hornworm were on your tomato. But I can't,
But the caterpillars would also leave.
Well, they're both caterpillars. And
evidence.
Both,
right.
The tomato hornworms would probably be a larger diameter, but other than that, they do the same sort of thing.
Right.
Are there little fluttery white moth butterflies around?
I haven't seen them, no.
Because usually when it gets that bad, there would be lots of adults fluttering around.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen anything, and I go out and there's less than that, and I go out the next day and there's less planted.
But the ribs are there.
Yeah.
And the leaf is, that does sound so much like.
It really sounds like them.
The caterpillar damage.
Well, let's assume that's it, then what do I do?
Well, probably Bacillus thuringiensis spray.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's a disease of caterpillars, and right. if that's a problem, hopefully they'll put out new leaves and they'll stay healthy. You have to reapply, you know, after every rainfall or every 10 days to 2 weeks if it doesn't rain.
Which there's, you could have been two times the whole summer. Wow.
Yeah, I don't think it's the bunnies, the sort of designer taste.
Now, with Brussels sprouts, it really is nice to remove those lower leaves and let the Brussels sprouts really get, you know, the sun. And it looks very sculptural at the end of the year. You just have the tuft of leaves at the top, and you've removed the older leaves. I learned that after I had grown them several years back.
This is my first endeavor with Brussels sprouts.
Oh, Brussels sprouts are great.
I love them, and I.
But it's like a garden sculpture at the end of the year.
Right,
I see what you mean.
Yeah. Late in the season, you can also take out the growing tip, mm-hmm. and that will force the sprouts to grow more. But that would be like in October or something when you don't want it to get any taller.
And my grandfather always let them have a frost or two. He said it encouraged the flavor.
I believe I've said on this program before, it takes some of the nastiness out of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it tastes better. It sweetens them.
That happens when they're trying to make sprouts in the warm weather.
Sure, it sort of mellows the
yes.
flavors.
Yeah,
good way of saying it.
It's a sweeter, more cabbage-like thing instead of that. Mm-hmm. Instead of that
knock you down
borderline bitterness that they get.
Right. Okay, so I'll put on some BT spray and then just start once I get it looking a bit better, then start taking out those bottom leaves just to keep to encourage the sprouts.
Well, the bottom ribs is what I was thinking. The ones that have been already, you know, maimed, you can remove those.
Well, actually, that's
or not. I'm really not a big leaf taker.
Oh, okay.
So.
Well, when it's ribs, I had ribs and I removed them.
Yeah, when they're eating back to the ribs, they're not doing a lot one way or the other.
Yeah, no photosynthesis there.
Mm-mm.
All right, well, I'll give that a try. I may end up at buying Brussels sprouts all winter at the grocery store, but we'll see.
Well, hopefully not. Hopefully these will go.
They should have some good ones at the farmer's market in the fall if yours don't make it.
Hers are going to do great.
Yeah.
Just know it.
Okay.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. And I bet after that, you know, after a frost and they're right there in the garden, I bet that's probably the best Brussels sprout you're ever going to have.
Mm-hmm. Except there's no cheese sauce. But yeah, maybe.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking about gardening this afternoon with Diane Nolan and Chuck Voigt. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions for our two gardeners. 333-9455, the number to call in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Well, as you mentioned, you know, we're getting to a point now where we start to think about, you know, next year. Speaking of wait till next year, next year. And I'm thinking next year I'd like to put some things in the garden, maybe some more perennials that would give me some flower, some fragrance late in the season. And I know that I have some, we have some late flowering hosta that are really lovely right now. And anemone,
Mm-hmm. Oh, mine are
beautiful.
Mine have been open a week now.
Just starting at our house. Are there other things that we could have that would give us some color and show, you know, in the dog days?
Asters are really great, and there's all sizes. There are wood asters that are shorter, and then the almost the native ones. Those give you really good color, and it's late. And they go tandem with garden mums. Everyone always thinks about garden mums, but they need to be planted not just in October. They need to be planted early enough to get root systems established.
And then you need to pinch.
And you need to pinch those, and you can pinch asters back until the end of June so you get more fullness and more flowers that way. Okay. So those come to mind, but I know there are a bunch more that I've got phlox that are still in flower right now. Even the purple coneflower is still in flower. Black-eyed Susans flower a little bit late.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I should have brought, hey, hand me a perennial
big,
book. I got this great perennial book.
The kinds of things. If you've got room for something that big.
That would be really good.
You know, lots of bright yellow flowers.
My perennial book is by the season, so that's why I'm staring at these.
Well, how handy.
Lamb's ear is a texture. And it looks good.
Yeah, and it's a pretty color, too.
Long a time.
It's got that sagey green color, and the texture is soft, just like a lamb's ear.
Exactly. There is also another aster called Baltonia that flowers well into the fall, and it's very pretty. It's taller. Joe Pieweed, I've been seeing that a lot. It's a native plant that's near the rivers and water, you know, likes moist areas, but I have it also in my garden. And it gets almost a paper plate, dinner plate size rounded flower head. It's really pretty, and it comes in whites and pinks.
If you can find boneset, it comes out late too, in a nice white.
Boneset?
Boneset is really pretty. That's a native, and you'll see that also.
Should we take another call?
Sure.
Okay. Listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I recently moved, and I have three different plants that I'd like to transplant from my backyard to my new backyard. And they're purple coneflower, sedum, and a perennial hibiscus. And I'm wondering when I should do that and if it would be safe or not safe for any of those three.
I think you could do all three of those. Purple coneflowers can be transplanted now if you just give it the care, you know, that it's going to get watered in and, you know, water it faithfully about an inch a week. Sedum, is yours starting to color?
Just barely, yeah.
Are they large clumps? Because purple coneflower is a really small clump. But, yeah, you can move the sedum because it's really somewhat hard to kill them. It's just sometimes the size of it is massive. The easiest time is in the spring before really anything's coming,
right.
And you can divide those so easy. But, yeah,
right.
you can move that. They're fairly shallow-rooted. Now, the hibiscus is going to be a little bit trickier because it's a deeper-rooted thing.
Okay,
so.
And it's already very moody.
great. Yeah, that's one way of saying it.
If
this is the first year, it's really started to come to and be really strong since the very beginning of the season and flowering and
exactly.
Not being quite so touchy, but...
I would wait till spring if you can make a deal with whoever is in the house after you, because generally they have a little bit of a winter hardiness issue, and if you put freshly transplanted on top of that, I think it might be fatal.
Okay.
And spring means late spring because it's usually May when they emerge, but there's not as much, you know, to move it. It's the top
right,
part.
Right, and if you get it before much has emerged, then there's less for it to have to support while it's getting reestablished.
Okay. For the hibiscus, you would recommend just waiting until spring?
If that's a possibility.
Definitely is. It was a friend of mine who moved.
Okay.
Great.
That's good.
And so with the sedum, would you recommend me splitting it? It's its third summer with me, and it's getting pretty full. Can I split it if I wish to leave some behind, or is that not recommended at this time of the year?
Do you have just the one plant?
No, I have two plants that are becoming really nice size.
Well, then what I'd actually do is move one plant, almost like you're ball and burlapping. You know, you're going to take the whole root system right now because of the stressful time of the year. And let it be beautiful and in flower, and maybe you'll have to do a little pea staking or, you know, to keep the flowers up, because when they get moved like that. They usually are a little bit more spindly.
Okay.
But then what I would do, so if you want to share with them, you could leave one, or you can move both, and then in March, just take a shovel down through one-third of it and give them that, and then cut your other two-thirds in half.
Okay.
And separate out, or cut it into fifths, or you really can't hurt sedum. And it's so easy to transplant that early. You just see the little rosette coming out of the ground and a shovel. They don't even know they've been moved.
It's kind of like hosta.
It is.
Well,
and about that timing, too.
And sometimes when you break off a shoot in the spring, you can virtually root it in a glass of water. And so
I've rooted it in the ground, even.
Yeah, taking cuttings from them when they're young and tender is not that difficult. So you could make a lot of sedums in a hurry. The other thing I want to throw in quickly is that if you transplant things now, especially around here because of the clay in the soil, they're going to want to pop up frost heave out of the ground. So once the ground freezes, you might want to mulch around them so that it stays frozen because I've planted things that were in pots and come back in the spring, and it's like it's just rejected them. It's spit it out, and the pot's just sitting there on top of the ground. It's kind of depressing, actually.
That happens with municipal park system, park districts. And I had a student who was in charge of all the planting up in the Chicagoland, area, and they lost so many plants because they didn't really mulch them in heavy. And because of the timing, and that was very expensive. So, put a pretty good 2-3 inch layer of mulch down.
Okay, great advice. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Next, we go to a listener in Chicago on line 4. Hi.
Hi. I just acquired a terrarium, or you could call it an aquarium. What kind of plants are popular in that type of surrounding?
Well, I know a lot of the succulents, if you don't want to overwater it, if you want to just let it be, it has drainage, right? You want to have.
No, it has a lid on it.
Okay, then no, forget the succulents. We'll have to go to more water plants then.
Plenty of moisture.
Yeah, like little rainforesty kinds of things, like mosses and
a little
and those kinds
papyrus,
of things.
A little miniature papyrus. That anything that's a water plant. Would do well in this, although probably not water lilies because they're not that small.
Would a florist be any help in that?
Actually, a garden center is a really full service, a large one, and there should be, in most garden centers, there will be a water plant area or a house plant area that really is where the water plants, they'll have a section. And ask someone, what do you have for water plants that are small?
Like little understory rainforest kinds of things.
Maidenhair ferns.
Yes.
We have a Gethsemane in Chicago. Is that what you have?
Yes, that's exactly where you want to go. They would be great.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line 2. Nope. They went away. Poof.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and expand. Okay. I talked about succulents, thinking that this had drainage. Succulents are for containers, clay with the drainage that can really take no moisture. I mean, they're very tough. There's so much interest in it now. Huge succulent areas in garden centers, as well as the water plant areas. Those are two areas that are really becoming popular for people to branch out. And you can water them once a week or less once they're established. Beautiful big echeveras and little sedums and hen and chicken type plants. And there are so many hen and chickens. Some have webbing, some are red. Just beautiful.
Burrow tails,
meaning burrow. And they will go on forever. I have about a 15-year-old burrow tail. You can break it off and it will reroot back.
Yeah, handle it and try not to break some of them.
Yeah, you try not to, but they're so.
They're a little brittle.
But those succulents are a good one for people who
want to start
out.
And every leaf, it's kind of like the sedum. Every leaf that falls off will, if you don't overwater it, will sprout and make its own new plant.
So I do containers for the porch, and I'll just take some of my succulents and put some of them draping down, and you can just start them new every year in your own containers. So succulents are well worth it.
Yeah. If you were going to put together a container at this point in the season, what would you put in there?
That's a very good question. I'd put something with fall flowers, so maybe, the aster or the sedum or mum. Then you want something that's spiky, so I've been using Formium. I don't know. I had another little grasses, too, that you can just put a grass with it. But the spiky looks good with
lemongrass.
The
works really well for that.
Lemongrass is beautiful.
If you don't mind that it'll freeze as it gets really cold.
All of these,
I would put in some flowering cabbage, flowering kale.
Oh yeah,
it's not going to be gorgeous right now, but as soon as the temperature gets cool, they light up and it's just amazing. And those will stay beautiful right up almost till Christmas most years.
A trailer in. You always want to have. We call them thrillers, spillers, and fillers. So those are your three things. You want the thriller in the middle, and you want the fillers. And then you want the spilling down one. So it could still be, he loves that. He's going to use that. It's how I always remember. You want
to you sit back and you have a chiller.
Yeah, and then, you could have a chiller. And that could be the kales could be the chillers.
That's right.
Into the season.
Yeah, they'll just kind of be there. And then when it gets cold,
and
zowie,
you can have pansies in
over.
With it.
Oh, yeah.
So now, because of Celeste, we have thrillers, fillers, spillers,
and
chillers that will go into the fall season. But it could be sweet potato plants still at this time of the year if you can find them. What else would – I mean, there's trailing annuals that you can maybe
– they root like crazy too. So if you could find one where you could borrow a couple of cuttings, you could get a sweet potato plant pretty easily.
True. So, yeah.
In fact, a lot of park districts are pruning them off sidewalks now because they're trying to take over parks when they grow out of the flower beds where they're planted.
There you go.
I have a question for you now that this makes me think, and that I suppose our buddy Mike Brunk would be the guy to ask, but in some of the parkways, you know, the strips in the middle of the street in Urbana.
They have great plantings there.
Yeah, and there's a plant that looks like a cross between a corn plant and a cattail, and it's purple.
Purple millet.
That is a nice plant.
Yeah, that was, hit was an Purple Majesty, I think.
Yeah, it was an All-America selection maybe 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I first saw it in a trial garden at University of Kentucky like the year before that.
I saw it at Chicago Botanic Garden when it was first coming out. Purple millet. And there's three or four or five kinds now that are improved upon that first one. It's very, very beautiful.
So is that
very prolific.
Is that a native plant or?
I think millet comes from maybe Africa.
Yeah, it's not native. It was hybridized.
Because it looks kind of corny.
Yes.
You know, so it's a grass.
Right.
And
takes the heat.
The seed of millet is either like you put in bird seed or certain people around the world will actually use it as a feed grain.
Makes wonderful.
A food grain.
We had a millet cake at one of our potlucks, and it was really good. So it's used as a food source.
Yeah. And I would imagine that it's going to be good in terms of not being a water hog.
It's not. No, it isn't. It can take those median strips.
Yeah, it would be along the line of like sorghums that are pretty drought tolerant. You can grow sorghum further west, for instance, because out in the Great Plains, because it doesn't need the water that corn does.
Very interesting. This is the Afternoon Magazine.
And in a container, that would be your thriller. That would be your
it
tall,
would be a
spiky
thriller.
Thing.
Why, that is tall. That'd be a pretty big container, though, wouldn't it? That'd be.
It could take, because it doesn't have a huge root system if you didn't plant more than one, I suppose.
Okay. How about we mention Organic Gardening Day one more time?
Yes.
And we'll wrap it up.
It's coming up November 10th. Call Carol at 217-333-7738. And she'll be happy to put you on the mailing list. And as soon as we get the flyer ready to go out, you'll get that, and you can get signed up. We have a great organic buffet lunch and five interesting talks during the day and a retail area where you can do some garden shopping and kind of get ready for the next year.
And then you'll be like Diane. You'll be ready to hit the ground running.
That's right. I have a little advertisement, too.
Oh, okay.
The University of Illinois starts on the 22nd of August.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you on radio land, if you have students in high school who are interested in studying horticulture, I'm the advising coordinator for our department, and I'd be glad to chat with them about what they need to do and how, you know, we're a fairly small department, and we all know your name and teach you how to be a landscaper or a greenhouse manager or a food crop specialist.
Right.
So consider the University of Illinois in horticulture.
Don't worry about being lost in the great mass of students, because we're just like a little family.
We are, yeah.
And a good family, too.
Just like here at the radio station.
That's right.
So that is an offer, because people don't always know
where to go. Well, do you want to leave folks with a phone number, Diane?
It would be 217 333 8074.
Okay, 8074. Very good. Well, hopefully it won't be too long and we'll see you again.
Okay. Okay. Happy gardening.
Care. Same to you. Diane Noland and Chuck Voigt have been our guests in this portion of the program. They are in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.